Yeah, episode 101. I think you're going to like this one. His name's Jimmy Allen, and he's a new artist. We'll talk to him in a second. But right now, we're currently in what's known as CRS Week. I haven't done a lot with CRS, but it's where all the radio program directors from all around the country come into Nashville. All companies, all stations, and just Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is artist after artist playing, bar after bar, showcase after showcase. And so they want to put on their best in front of all these program directors. So Jimmy Allen's been out doing a lot, and he is one that everybody's loving, man. And you're going to hear why in a second. But bow, 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 ba-da-ba-da, bow, bow. But we're putting out an episode every Thursday now. There'll be extra ones that come out, too. I'm about to actually go over to a CRS awards show where this is the finale of the CRS 3 days, and I think they feed us dinner. Is that right, Mike D?
Yep.
Are you going?
Yep.
You got a ticket?
Mm-hmm.
I know today for a while there was...
No tickets.
There's always tickets. But that's going to happen. Nah. We'll see if we won the award. Hope we did. If we didn't, I'll be okay, though. I don't think I'll be that sad. I might be embarrassed. But I get a free dinner, and it's just late. I just feel like I would be a douchebag if I went and won the award and I wasn't there. It's not even about winning the award. It's the look if I'm not there and we win the award. That just isn't a good look. So I want to go. And that's all. I was surprised to see. It's a New Faces show tonight, too. It's five new artists who last year they had big years, like fresh faces. So I think Lauren Elena playing it, Midland, and Carly Pierce, and Garth Brooks. I don't know. But that's it. Just wanted to catch you guys up, let you know what I'm doing, and check out the Christian Bush podcast called Geeking Out, where it's Christian talking to people about what they geek out about. Granger Smith was on one of them so far. A manager named Brian is on another one, where they talk about martial arts. Brian also oddly produced Lindsay L. No, Brian's Lindsay L's manager. Christian produced Lindsay L's record. I used to date Lindsay L. It's just like worlds colliding, but not on purpose. So check out that. It's called Geeking Out with Christian Bush. Other than that, here we go. Away we go. Episode 101 with Jimmy Allen.
All right. Thank you. I don't know why I'm saying thank you because there's nobody here. We haven't even started. I'm already thanking people. All right. Jimmy Allen's here. You good?
Yeah, man. Doing great.
Did you live in your car for a bit?
Yeah, man.
Is that true?
Yes, it is. It was not a fine point.
I was reading stuff about you. And we met a few times already.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly, we've met a few times. We get to that in a second. But what's the deal with the car? You living in Nashville?
Yeah, I was living in Nashville. It was when I first moved here. I was living in a trailer for a little bit. And then the lady was putting the trailer up.
What do you mean trailer? Like, I lived in a trailer park. You mean that kind of trailer?
Like, it was a trailer out in, like, Spring Hill on 18 acres of nothing.
So a real trailer.
Yeah, it was like a real trailer with tile floor, and I was sleeping on an air mattress when I first moved here. And then the lady was like, hey, we're going to sell the trailer. I was like, all right, well, I can't afford it. So then I spent one night with a buddy, and then it was my car. It was either live in my car or go back to Delaware. So I lived in my car for a little bit.
How long?
About 4.5 months.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah. But I saved a lot on rent because...
You lived in your car for 4 months,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, man. Yep. And the only person that knew was a guy named Aaron Benward. He was in this old country duo called Blue County. He found out or whatever, and he's been like one of my closest buddies ever since. But yeah.
So how do you shower when you're living in your car?
I was working at this gym. So I would like shower at the gym. I would sneak in and wash clothes. Luckily, like the gym didn't have cameras then, so I was like washing clothes, showering. I would eat there because I worked in a snack bar, so it was good times.
So how would you sleep? Would you lower the front seat?
So I was in the front seat. I had my little box TV in the passenger seat, and then I had that adapter where you could still plug your TV in. So every time my mom would call, I would just crank up my PlayStation to make her think I was it.
So your mom didn't know you. Nah. Would she have said, "Hey, come home"?
She would have, but I couldn't come home, and at the same time, I was still trying to send money home to help her out financially, so that's another reason why I wanted to live in my car a little longer, just so I could have more money to send to my mom and my two sisters. So I said, well, I can only sleep for like 4 or 5 hours anyway, so I start the car up, let the car get warm, turn it off, wrap up in that little blanket I had a sweatpants on, some jeans, and just lay the seat back. The first 2 nights, it was weird, though, like maybe the first even week, because when you're sleeping in in the driver's seat, sometimes you think you're still driving. So I would like wake up, like, crap. Wake up like, oh, you know how it is when you pull over at a rest stop and like you wake up and think you're driving. So like the first week, it took me a while to get adjusted. But after that, it was cool, man. It's I look
Where'd
at
you
it.
Park?
On Carruthers and Cool Springs, between this business parking lot over there behind my gym. Between those two parking lots, the good thing is it was shaded with trees. So I would just go back and forth. I didn't really have anything but just clothes and an air mattress. So my little Malibu was just was home for a while.
So you didn't worry about someone breaking into the car or saying, hey, you can't park here anymore?
Mm-mm. Because it was Cool Springs. You know, if I'd have been like in Nashville or something, I'd have been worried. But it was Cool Springs. And then behind my gym, nobody even knew where Prairie Life Fitness was. So I was back behind my gym by the dumpsters and stuff, and nobody's over there hanging out really. So it was.
Were you playing music around town?
Man, I was writing. I played downtown. I played at like Rippy's, Fiddlin' Steel.
So you were playing Broadway.
I was doing that sometimes for fun, like filling in for people whenever I could, and I was working at the gym full time was keeping the bills paid for a while.
Man, you come full circle, man. Now yeah. You got a deal.
Finally, 10 years later, man. It's a 10-year town, for sure.
Wow. All right. Well, let me hit one of these songs, and we can just kind of go back a bit. But here's the song, Best Shot. Because when you smile, I see the sun. This is a single right now, right?
Yes. Yeah. Goes down to California, and there's no
doubt because of you, I'm not. This song's really good.
You
know, I think it's really good.
Thanks.
It's really good.
I'm not saying that I'm perfect, Oaks, girl. You know I'm not. But I'll love you with everything I got. Girl, I'll give you my best shot.
Musically, what do you do?
Guitar, piano, drums. But for the record, just sing.
No, but yeah, for the record, because there are people in town.
Yes,
that are way better than could be.
Yes.
But you do play piano? I saw you start doing your hands while I was playing. So.
Yeah, I grew up a drummer in church, and then I moved. Then I started singing. Then I moved to piano. Then I didn't start really playing guitar until I got to Nashville. Because I got tired of paying a dude $50 to play a writer's round. So I was like, man, I could just learn how to play my own songs myself. And, you know, luckily it started panning out. So.
I think you're the only person I've ever met from Delaware.
Yeah.
Darn a lot of you.
No, it's about two of us, man.
Two.
About two. About two of us, man. It's not a lot.
So you grew up in what, like a... Is there any part of Delaware that's not rural? Because I'm from Arkansas, and we don't have many places that aren't rural.
Yeah, northern Delaware is a place called Wilmington. So Wilmington's
the capital, huh?
Yeah, Dover. Dover's the capital.
Crap,
yeah, where the Air Force Base is.
Dang.
You're close, though, by like 20 miles off.
By like a pinch of the finger on the map.
Yeah, because, you know, you can get through the whole state in about like 2 hours. So you got Dover, and there's places that, man, when you think about it, it's so crazy. I didn't realize how rural and country that place was until you leave, and then you go back. But like Wilmington... You get shot up there.
Why do I know Wilmington, Delaware?
It's like right under Philly.
You know why I know it? Because my show's on there. That's why I thought it was. Yeah, okay, we're on in Wilmington.
Yeah, yep, you are.
And so that makes sense then. Okay, well, so you grew up in Wilmington?
No, I grew up in Milton.
Which is not even.
Milton is in the middle of nowhere.
So you grew up in a rural town?
Yeah, it was like soybean fields, cornfields, fishing, four wheeling, setting stuff on fire. All that good stuff.
What'd your mom and sisters, what'd your mom do?
So my mom used to be a nurse. She's retired. My dad was in the military. He's home now, just fishing probably right now. So he's the one that got me on country music. Like, that's all he listens to. Like, if you change the dial in his truck, he will slap you. Like, I remember we was headed to a softball game and I tried to turn on something else. He punched me right in the shoulder. I said, don't you turn my radio station. And my mom listened to nothing but Christian music. So that's, for a while, it was just those two genres. Then I got cool, you know.
When did you get cool?
Like, eighth, ninth grade, got into, like, rock, hip-hop, R&B, you know.
I think everybody did, though.
Yeah,
at
man.
At that point.
You had to.
You didn't have... Everybody got into hip-hop in ninth, 10th, 11th grade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, yeah.
And if you... if Yeah.
And it's a big change in life, too, I think, around that age. You know, you want to...
The armpit smell.
Dude, you get armpit hairs.
Start to get boners.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still in that phase. So, I kind of tell the story that how you and I came to know each other is that the day your EP came out, I was online. I was I was looking at some of the new releases. I was on a couple things, a couple different. I went to Spotify to hear the whole record, but I had heard Best Shot on maybe iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't going to buy the whole thing without knowing I wanted Spotify. And I reached out to one of my friends and said, hey, what's up with this Jimmy Allen guy? I just heard this record. I guess it came out today. I didn't know it was new, but I happened to stumble upon it the day it came out. And he said, yeah, he's really good. He's going to sign it. Your record label.
Mm-hmm.
So I tweeted you and said, hey, man, I just listened to records. Really good.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. I didn't know. You know, I just want to let you know I was listening. And Amy, my co-host, came. She goes, hey, you know who I met? Maybe Kid Rock?
Yeah, it was a Kid Rock concert. Yeah.
Said, I met Jimmy Allen. I was like, why do I know that name? I said, oh, that's right. I was listening to his record on Friday night.
Yeah, I freaked out when you tweeted me, though. Not going to lie.
And I said, he's got a really – so I made Amy listen to it. And full circle, I bring you in for the Radiothon, Sandy Radiothon. And every year I do a class of 2018 this year. And then I see you again at Kid Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I was with Kid Rock the other day.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And you were there playing for the radio people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then here we are at the house.
Gotta love it.
Man, look at you. Look at this. This was for the underdogs. How'd you get the money to pay for this record?
Huh?
How'd you get the money to pay for this
record?
My
publisher. I signed a pub deal with Wide Open Music, which is Ash Bowers and Amy Hendon Scott. Ash funded it. He was like, man, let's just make the record we want to make, and let's take some risk. And so we did. So Ash Bowers and Eric Torres co-produced it, and then we went to labels afterwards, but we just wanted to make the music we wanted to make.
So you shopped after you made the music.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing, because then the label doesn't really make you who they want to make you.
Yeah, man. And I spent so many years trying to be something that other people wanted me to be. And it was the first time in my life where I was able to, I wasn't in a box creatively, and I had no timeline. So we were able to just try different sounds out, write the songs I wanted to write, find the songs that I wanted to find, and just be who I wanted to be musically. And it was, God, refreshing. You know what I mean?
I live my whole life like that. So, yeah. All right, let me talk about this for a second. If you've ever stumbled through a social media site around Valentine's, you know that a lot of people love to show off what their boyfriend or husband or whomever surprised them with. So this year, 1-800-Flowers.com, I have you ready to go. Right now, when you order early, you can get 18 pink and red enchanted roses for only $29.99. Valentine's Day is just days away. Or let's act like it's months from Valentine's Day. You may be listening to this later. 1-800-Flowers.com/bones. We'll talk about Valentine's specifically. There's a bouquet right now ready at pink and red roses. Perfect for Valentine's Day. She's going to love it. 18 red and pink enchanted roses for only $29.99. A great reward, for thinking ahead and ordering early. So make sure you lock in the offer. When it comes to Valentine's, don't settle for anything less than what's called the Rose Authority, 1-800-Flowers.com. 18 red and pink enchanted roses for $29.99. 1-800-Flowers.com/bones. At any point, 1-800-Flowers.com/bones. Get the deal, what they're offering now, 1-800-Flowers.com/bones. Well, so you moved to town what year?
2007.
Man, you've been here a long time.
Mm-hmm. August 7, 2007.
I would say, how do we never run into each other? But I don't go out.
Yeah,
so
the thing is, I don't go out.
I don't run into anybody. I may driven by you in the car.
Probably.
In your Malibu.
Yep, and I love Jeeps. I'm sure I saw your Jeep. Yeah.
Yeah.
How long have you had the Jeep?
Nah, not that long. I got it like 6 months ago.
Okay, yeah, probably.
I live on a really tall hill here,
mm-hmm.
so when it gets real icy, I can't get up or down.
Oh, you know.
So instead of being trapped forever, I bought a Jeep so I could. And I got to finally use it for that, the big ice storm hit.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Forward thinking.
And I just wanted to look cool.
Yeah. Jeeps are cool.
Yeah. And I always had cars. I have a car. But I was like, man, I want to look like I have big ding dongs.
So what did you have before the Jeep?
What? No, I didn't have two. I have two cars now.
Yeah.
So I just had one car. And I think I had a BMW. Yeah. A black BMW. And it was, it was nice.
Nice.
But you started it in. Jeeps.
You can't get up no hill in a BMW.
No,
you look cool though sitting at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like that cool. You really can't polish a turd, as my grandma would say. Once I started making money, because forever I had a Pontiac Sunfire that had almost 300,000 miles on it,
mm-hmm.
and that was the car that I drove from Little Rock to Austin when I do my night show, and I had that car forever. But when I first started to make money, meaning I was making $48,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I bought an old school BMW.
Nice.
Not because it was old school. It was just old.
It was old.
And
I would say
probably like 80,000. So, and it's about 15 years old. But I thought, I'm driving a BMW. And I grew up in Arkansas. We didn't have nice cars.
Yeah.
I had a Subaru before I had a Pontiac Sunfire.
Yeah.
And I kept buying, every time I would get something, and I'd buy a nicer BMW. And then I got a really, really nice one. And I thought, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done with this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But Jeeps are cool. Man, Jeeps are in. Like, Jeeps are in.
What, I don't know. I'm not the in guy.
Yeah.
I'm in a t-shirt from the 90s. I'm in a Matchbox 20 t-shirt. I'm not that cool.
But that's a great record, though.
Yeah, yeah. Yourself or Someone Like You, it's a fantastic record. Yeah, like
great record.
It was the first, it was our introduction to Matchbox. I don't know.
Yeah.
When were you born?
I was born in 85.
Okay, so you're 5 years younger than I am, so mm-hmm. you got to experience this, though. Mm-hmm. So. Man, whenever Push came out, I want to push you around. Well, I will, and I will.
Yes, dude.
Dude. That was the jam.
Jam, dude.
But even songs like Cody, which people don't even know, it's like yeah. album tracks. Yeah, it's a good
What's
record.
That one song off that record that I love?
I don't know what you love, but I can tell
Real
you.
World?
Oh, yeah.
That's my jam.
That's a good
dude.
One. I saw Rob Thomas play on just a piano for an hour and a half at an outdoor venue.
How was that?
Fantastic.
God.
It was, yeah. And it was in the middle of his really messed up stages. I think, you may Google this, Mike. I think he had a huge coke problem. And I don't know if he does anymore or not. Scott Stapp was the dude who was really messed up. That dude, I had a whole talk with Devin Dawson about Scott Stapp. We both have Scott Stapp stories where I played ping pong with Scott Stapp, and he was out of his mind.
He was out of
his
mind.
And he still dominated me.
I've never met him.
You ever met Rob Thomas?
Nope. I met Kyle Cook, is a friend of mine now from the band.
Yeah.
From Matchbox with the Hair. Yeah, he lives here.
Do they hate each other?
I don't think so. No, not that I know of. Like, everything's cool from what I know.
Hey, make sure that Rob Thomas had that problem, or I'm going to take it back there.
I mean, he admitted to doing it, and then he stopped when he had a kid.
Okay, well, so he did it. Maybe it was when he was doing it. Listen, I just know a lot of stories. You know, I've been around. I started doing this early.
Yeah,
so
dude. You got all this. You get all the stories over the years.
Is it fun and funny to see people now want to be your friend because you got something going that probably didn't want to be your friend before you had something going?
Dude.
That would drive me crazy.
I have so many friends.
That drive me crazy.
I've had producers and songwriters that I tried to like bug and get them to write with me years ago. I was like, trust me, I'm going to work hard. I'm going to give everything I have to this. He's like, nah, I just don't have time. I appreciated the guys that were honest. That would say, you know what, Jimmy? I'm getting income from this. I don't have time right now. I respect that. But the BSers, the guys, here's my number, man. Take me, call me. So I'd call them, wouldn't hear a response. And then you see them in person. They're like, hey, man, we should get up. We should write some time. Then I finally got to the point where I was just like, man, screw that. Get the record deal. EP comes out. I got so many congratulations from those guys. Congratulations on being one of Bobby Bones' class of 2018, man. That's huge, man. You're going to take over. We should write. No, I'm good. And it's not to be an a-hole, man. It's just I like real people, man. That's why I picked my band. That's why one of the reasons why I chose my label. One of the reasons why I chose my booking agency and my publishing companies because I don't want to just build people that we can do business with. I would like to dig a little deeper. Like, I'm a below the surface type dude. Like, I want to build a family to the point where that's my biggest weakness because people could eventually screw me over because I care too much, you know. But like my band, love those guys, man. We're like brothers, you know. Josh, Tate, and Seth. And the weird thing is, my bass player is brothers with Trip, the drummer in Land Cup. They're just, I'm all about just good people, man. And you know, when people show you who they are. Like my grandma used to say, believe them the first time. So if they're an a-hole and a jerk the first time, they'll be an a-hole and a jerk eventually.
Do you feel like people are, because you go in, you're a black dude in a country format. Mm-hmm. Like what? You don't know how somebody really is the first time when you're at a radio.
Yeah. But I mean when they give you proof, man. Like, you know, when they're just blatant. Like, you know, you can tell. Like if...
I just don't trust anyone ever.
Yeah,
I don't
tell
first time, second time, I don't trust anybody.
You can kind of tell who's genuine just from, one, the reputation that might precede them and how people respond when you mention their name versus, and the vibe you get from them. Like, you can meet somebody and kind of get a vibe. Because there's been songwriters I meet, and I don't know what it is, but I'm like, whoa, bro, there's something coming off of you, like, that I don't really like.
Do you feel like there's extra pressure, though, that someone's like, okay, are you a country artist, you're a black dude?
Man, I don't really feel like there's pressure. I just feel like there's always going to be a set like judgment already on me because it's like people feel like since I'm black, I have to prove I'm from the country. And I'm like, why? You know what I mean? Like, why do I have to prove I'm from the country? Why do I have to take you to my hometown so you can see how country it was? You know, it's super country. Like, why do you have to meet my old country redneck dad?
I feel the same way, dude. In a way, like, people go, oh, you're not country. Let me take you back to Mountain Pine, Arkansas.
Hey, that's what I'm saying,
and let me show you.
Yeah.
Let's compare notes.
Dude, I know it's country.
Then. You can have all your judgment, and then we can compare notes. And we'll, but yeah, similar, I'm the nerdy dude with the big... you know, glasses that comes from pop, and they're like, ah, for years, you're not country.
I can't imagine. How was that when you came
over? It was awful.
The reception was horrible?
It was for years.
God,
for years. It was terrible. Because I didn't look like they wanted me to look.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now it was the greatest decision ever.
And you're blunt. You can't be blunt in country music. You can't say what you feel.
Yeah, you're not supposed to.
You're not supposed to.
And I've been in trouble a lot for doing that.
You're supposed to
stay
behind closed doors.
Yeah, you're supposed to be kind to the people that open the gates.
Yeah.
And so I just came, and I was probably a little too much, too quick, and I just kicked the gates.
Yeah.
And I kicked them and kept kicking them, and they didn't always fall down. I didn't kick them all down. But
I appreciate your honesty, though, man. Like, I'd rather somebody just be honest and you know where they are versus, you know.
Now I just try to put the honesty in places I feel is most important.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I pick a lot of battles because, man, I didn't care about battles. I was just shooting everybody down.
Yeah.
I was like, you suck, you suck, you suck. And now I may feel that way, but I just really want to go after people I think really it's that.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, because I came into this format, people said, you don't look like we think you're supposed to look. And I wondered if you had felt that.
Dude, man, I felt it, and I get asked a lot of times. I had this guy like tweet me, actually. He was like, Jimmy, like, is your music country at all, or is it straight hip-hop? I wanted to be like, have you even heard hip-hop? My music's not even close to hip-hop, bro. Like, it's not even, I wanted to, like, retweet it so bad. But I was like, you know what? There's always going to be that. But for me, country music is a lot about how you're raised, your morals, what's important to you, and storytelling, and the music being authentic to you. That's country music to me. Because I grew up on, like, you know, Aaron Tippin, Montgomery Gentry, Garth Brooks, Alabama. That's all the artists my dad, like, listened to, you know. And but, you know, I have a musical palate that has grown like us all. You know, we'll go from Kid Rock to Keith Urban to Jay-Z, you know.
And everybody does that. Everybody does that. Mm-hmm. It's just a super vocal minority that does it but don't want to admit they do it publicly because then they can't be the vocal minority.
Yep.
I get into these conversations a lot with people who say, hey, we're trying to create something that's a lifestyle brand. Mm-hmm. What would you do? And I say, well, the last thing I would do is chase the vocal minority.
Yeah.
What you want to do is go to that majority that's actually consuming the product and enjoying it so much they're not saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't feel like they're the people reacting. But when you eat a good sandwich, do you send a little email to the sandwich people and go, hey, that's a great sandwich? No. Yeah,
you just eat it.
If you get a hair in your sandwich, hey.
Exactly.
There aren't as many hair in sandwiches.
I'm going to steal that metaphor, by the way. I'm going to start telling that one. That's a good one.
It's just those are the people that the very minute section of people that are pissed off that it's not going their directions are the ones screaming all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to people and just listen to who's yelling, I'm the worst thing to ever happen to the format. The absolute worst. Now,
why do you think that? Why do you feel that?
But all the time. Every time I hit my at reply on Twitter, it's people cursing my name or it's blogs how terrible I am. But that being said,
they're still talking about you.
Yeah, and you know I don't care about that so much. But I have 8 to 9 million people that aren't saying anything because they're consuming the product and they're satisfied by it. And they continue to consume it. They buy tickets to my comedy shows. They listen to my radio show. But we get so fixated on people yelling at what they don't like.
Yeah,
that's just in a small box.
Yeah.
And if there aren't people yelling that they don't like you, that means there aren't going to be people yelling that they do love you.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the music.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get my theory on creativity.
I understand, man. There was one moment when I came into, you know, because I was doing what I'm doing now, I was doing in 2007. But country was saying I was too pop back then because that was even before Darius came over. And, you know, there was no current like Sam Hunt or Thomas Rhett. The pop country for guy thing wasn't really happening, you know, and then I was too country for pop, so it was like there were years where I kind of just sat in this box, and people were like, well, are you really country, or are you just trying to be country because you couldn't get a pop deal? Well, I was offered a pop deal, I just turned it down because they told me I had to lose my boots and I couldn't talk about my small town. They wanted to make me an urban One Republic. A black.
Is that what they said?
Yeah, they said they wanted me to make me a black version of One Republic, but I was like, man, I can't not be who I am, you know. So,
what's a black version of One Republic?
like, One Republic, but black.
I mean, but even I hear One Republic, and I don't associate a race with them.
Hey, dude, I'm telling you. And the funny thing is, people we still hear with our eyes. Because I, you know, like, for instance, somebody heard my music once. And I'm thinking they would say it reminds them of, like, you know, Sam Hunt, TR, FGL, more of that. They're like, man, your stuff sounds just like Darius Rucker. I'm like, what? What?
That's seeing with our eyes. They looked at album art and just...
Dude. Man, dude, it's so funny. Like and everywhere I go when Darius is in town, if I go somewhere that Darius is, true story. So when him and John Mellencamp did their...
Crossroads?
Their Crossroads. Yeah. I was there, right? So I went, because they were in the theater downstairs at the Bridgestone. So I went to the bathroom, and I'm just trying to get to the bathroom. The security lady stops me and says, hey, are you looking for Darius? I was like, nah, I'm going to the bathroom. She's like, okay, cool, but no worries. As soon as you come back, I'll take you to Darius's room. I was like, I'm not here with Darius. I don't even know Darius. Like, I've met him twice, but I don't know him. She said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Coming back out, I was at the Ryman. Not Ryman, but Grand Ole Opry for CMA Week last year. Backstage, same thing. This guy was like, sir, you looking for Mr. Rucker's room? No. You're not with Darius. No, I'm not with Darius.
That's funny, man.
But it's hilarious. I get a kick out of it.
Let me play this one here. Home to You.
Baby, it's you, the one that I want to spend my nights on the phone till the sun comes through. Breaking up a heat wave, real life calling, so I gotta get back to you. Don't get too far, just know my heart is wherever you are. When I hear your voice, I wanna get back home to you. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned being too pop and too country for wherever. Mm-hmm. When I was in pop and hip-hop, I was too country to do pop and hip-hop.
Oh, that's funny.
When I get to country, I'm too pop to be... Still, yeah. And wherever I go, I've just never fit, but I'm telling you, you know what makes you fit the most is not fitting mm-hmm. anywhere.
Yeah.
The greatest thing to ever happen to me was not fitting anywhere.
Yeah.
Because it made me like everybody else. Mm-hmm. Not I liked them, but it made me like them.
Yeah.
Because nobody fits into any specific little cabinet. Mm-hmm. And whenever you don't fit... You relate to the other people, and that's the people.
They don't fit, exactly.
Because we look at our phones, that's all we have all kinds of music, movies, Netflix shows. Mm-hmm. There just isn't a cabinet we have to get into.
No, not at all. And so I'm sure if you went down your Netflix things, it's stuff that I'm sure you got like 20% of people might like one of your movies. Another 20% might not go another one. And what your difference is what attracts people to you. And that's why I think it's great to be, like you said, to just be yourself. If you're considered quote unquote different, you're different. But in every one of your differences, people looking up to you or looking or listening to you will gravitate to some part of, you know, of who you are. So
that's cool. Talk about this for a second. Let's talk about Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers fresh and pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door. You can cook them under 45 minutes. It's the thing. Cook them whenever you want. The menu changes every week based on what's in season, and it's designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. 12 new recipes each week. Pick 2, 3, 4 recipes based on what fits your schedule. They're high quality. I'm talking about non-GMO ingredients. Meat, no added hormones. Strip steak and potatoes with spicy maple collard greens. That's happening there. I'm looking at it now. Some spicy chicken and stir-fried vegetables with jasmine rice. You can make that. Trust me, you can make it. You may be a terrible cook, but you can make this. Soy glazed Korean rice cakes with broccoli and soft boiled eggs. You can make that. They'd be like, dang, you're a chef. You don't have to tell them it's Blue Apron. Blue Apron's treating the listeners of the Bobby Cash right now to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/BobbyCast. $30 off blueapron.com/BobbyCast. There you go. You gotta put that in there. blueapron.com/BobbyCast. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. So I was reading a story about you used to live off prize winning
mm-hmm.
for like shows,
mm-hmm.
reality shows, or like just go to like trivia night. Like, what kind of money? How are you making prize money?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I used to live off trivia money.
Well, I know. I'm saying like they say, I was reading a story or something online that said you would go to these shows and you compete and you win money and that's how you would pay your bills.
So there was a couple like talent shows I did.
But I'm saying it's like a trivia night at a local bar, like a talent night at a local bar?
Yeah, a talent night at a local bar. But that only happened. Maybe whoever wrote that might have like exaggerated a little bit. It was only like 3 times. It was like 3 times I went and I won like a local talent show, you know, and little stuff in Delaware. It's like $400 here, $500 here. I would go to like Philly and do like open mics and a couple dollars. I think I made total like maybe like 10 grand over a span.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, over a span of like 2 years though. But it was enough for me to, you know, financially take care of what I needed to take care of and just get back to the next, you know, to the next talent show, whatever. So
you were so close to New York. Like, that seems like the place you would go to try to sell your music, right?
It just, I thought about it, but it just didn't fit me, you know. And New York for me was scary. Like, coming from Milton, like, going to New York, oh, my God, dude. Like, it was just all these people, everybody was different. Because I got used to, you know, small town, you know everybody. Everybody dresses like this, we talk like this, you say hello, you speak to everyone. I'm not used to, like, people, like, mean mugging me, like, walking down the street. Like, my first time going to New York was horrible. Like, one, I took the Chinese bus there. For people that don't know what the Chinese bus is.
I don't know what the Chinese bus is.
It's $25, like, round trip. You catch the bus at Wilmington, Delaware. It takes you to New York, to Chinatown. It just drops you off. Like, it's not Greyhound or nothing. Like, there's nothing on the bus. It's just this Asian dude driving the bus. It's like a coach bus. But I've saved so much money taking the Chinese bus to New York. I went there by myself. I think, how old was I? Like, 17, I think. And it freaked me out. But I got lost in the subway. But I'm glad I did it. Like, it really opened me up to a world where I knew nothing. And I had to accept the fact that, you know, I don't know anything. I either need to learn or shut up and stay in my hometown. So
you moved down to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a further trip, so it's harder to go home.
Mm-hmm.
That's across the country.
Yeah, I feel like it's better to pull the safety net. I feel like when you pull a safety net, whether your safety net is family, a plan B, I feel like you're not able to really put 100% into what you're doing, because you're like, eh, if it don't work, I'm good. But when you have no option but to succeed and be successful, you have no choice but to work hard and literally give every part of who you are to what you're chasing. And I feel like that's when you find who you are first. You become stronger and then you become successful.
You know who you are now?
Yes.
Who are you?
Man, I am a guy from Milton, Delaware that uses music to, you know, one, make myself happy because I love it, but also I use my story to motivate people to not give up on what they're chasing. I honestly believe that's why I went through everything I did, because I feel like there are so many people that are chasing different careers, whether it's a career, whether it's a relationship. It's just that underdog mentality, that don't quit, that you set your sight on something, you practice, you network, you do whatever it takes to be ready for that opportunity. Because I honestly believe we're all given at least one opportunity to get everything that we've worked so hard for, but it comes down to, are we ready when that opportunity presents itself? And that's just me, man. I'm like a cheesy positive dude. Like, that's just how I see life. I always see, like, there's a way to win, even when, you know, the odds are against you. Like, if you push a little bit harder, eventually whoever's holding you back and whoever's fighting for you not to win, they'll get tired of trying to hold me back before I get tired of trying to press forward. And that's just the mentality you have to keep.
So how did you decide on your current record label?
I love the radio staff. I love that it was small. It was family oriented. I love that I could just text back and forth with the VP of the label. I love that, you know, BMG came in. I was a huge fan of Zach Katz when he was with Beluga Heights, Jason Derulo, and all those guys.
Who is now with BMG. BBR.
Yep. Yeah. So my thing was, man, all right, they're good people. You know, they're accessible. You know, they're honest. They're hardworking. If I could get, you know, BBR to help with U.S. radio, I can get BMG to come in and help with U.S. and internationally, you know. So I felt it first as a personal family vibe and then a business. You know, I was like, okay, cool. We won't just go here. And I have the opportunity to be a guinea pig, you know. And
how so?
I was the first artist that they signed after the merger. They signed me, then they signed Chase Rice and Kid Rock. And I was the only one without a fan base, you know. And I felt like, man, I'm forever grateful to John Loba for taking that chance, signing me 3 months after them being bought, because he put his neck on the line for me because I had nothing going on, you know. So him investing that much faith in me made me want to work even harder, because I felt like we all have something to lose, you know, me, John, the head of the new head of promo at Stony Creek, Byron. Like, I feel like we're all like in this for the first time at these new positions, and we want it. You know, we have a good time, but we work equally as hard, and we all want the same thing, which is to be successful.
I feel like listening to you talk for a long time. My only goal was to destroy all haters. That was it. I was just people had told me my whole life I wasn't talented enough. I didn't have a good enough voice. I wasn't funny enough. But as I've gotten older, instead of wanting to destroy the haters, I've wanted to really show the people that supported me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to show them they were right.
Mm-hmm.
More so than tell the people that they're wrong.
Yep.
I always want to tell the people that were right, like, appreciate that, and I want to prove you right. Yep.
And it holds a lot more weight, man. Did you ever feel like, because for me and my family, I felt like I couldn't give up on my dreams because I had sisters, cousins that were looking up to me. And I feel like I was always the one that was stepping out the trailblazer. And if I gave up, how would their confidence be? If I'm always the one that they were looking up. So part of my reason for never giving up was I knew I had two little sisters that were watching everything I did. And one of my sisters actually told me, she's like, Jimmy, I'm glad you didn't quit. Because every step you made, I watched. And if you didn't quit, I don't know what I would have done. And like you said, you being different, you stepping up. Like, I feel like there are people, whether it's your family or friends, that were watching you every step. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I just feel like we motivate more people than we know, man. You know?
I hope I motivate people.
You do.
I wrote a book and was, you know, I really got inside of my life. I don't have any family, really.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom died. She's 46. She died of drugs and alcohol. I don't know my real dad. And so for me, it was never, I want to show my family, but it was, I want to show people like me that mm-hmm. were told, you can't do this. You're from a small town. You're a food stamp kid.
Yeah.
You'll never be able to make it.
Remember them food stamp days.
Yeah, and my food stamp days, we didn't have a card. We had colored
the
paper. Actual,
they just switched that, I think, like the last, what, 10? No, not in 10 years. 8 years. We had the brown ones.
The book.
Yeah. Those are the most embarrassing things to pull out.
And you'd be at the grocery store, and you'd pull out the yellows and the blues.
And the brown ones.
Yeah, so.
Did you have Wick, too?
Did we have what?
Did you have Wick?
I don't know what Wick is.
So Wick was like, it's basically, it looks like a menu that used to sit in a plastic bag, and you get like Kick cereal, milk, Juicy Juice.
So we didn't have that, but we would go stand in line for government cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And government rice.
Yep.
So we didn't get a bag, but we did have probably a different program where it was similar to that, and they would give you this box full of stuff.
Full of food.
Yeah, we would go down to the church, and once a month we'd go wait in line.
Nice.
But those are the kind of people that I want to say, I'm you.
Yeah.
If I can get out. Yeah. And some people getting out doesn't mean success in radio, music. Mm-hmm. It means having a family and being able to support them.
Mm-hmm.
Success is different for everyone.
Exactly.
But it's, if I can have success, and then you can have success. Mm-hmm. So that's who I like to step out and and I have a scholarship at my high school that I do every year. I pay for somebody. So it's things like that I care about.
Yeah.
So, and eventually I have a family if I get somebody to keep me.
Welcome to the club.
I don't know, dude.
Welcome to the club, man.
What do you mean, welcome to the club? What, you got no girl?
Man, nah, man. I
You said man, nah. I mean something recent or something new. Go ahead.
Man, you know, I have, you know, someone that I am, you know, very,
you
very...
You don't get too much into it, right? That's a podcast. Know, this will live forever, so I'm probably... But
interested in,
you know, you never married?
No, I've never been married, man.
Been close?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, me either.
Mm-mm.
I've had some great relationships. I've poisoned them all.
Yeah, thought about it. You know what? I wonder, what poisoned it for you?
Insecurity, scared of commitment, it started to get too good.
Mm-hmm.
My last relationship with Lindsay, who's on your label, not even label, on your imprint even, Stony Creek, was fantastic.
Yeah.
But then I start to go, I'm probably going to do something wrong. I've been to therapy a bunch. I'm broke, all that.
Dude, there's this, you know, there's this girl now that's very, just, you know, special. And I think it could be something, you know, that could definitely last forever. But my fear that creeps into my head a lot is, will I mess it up? You know, because you have a lot of your insecurities, you know, come in, whether it's, you know, not feeling, you know, adequate, you know, if it's, you know, abandonment issues, things that we beat ourselves up a lot. And, you know, she's amazing, and I'm sure she'll be listening to this. But, you know, she's special. She's one of a kind, so.
I always felt like if I were to lose my job or whatever job it is, because if I were to leave my current company, there are about three other companies that would go boom and pounce immediately. But if I were to lose this for some reason, I would think, I don't know that I'm worth being with. And I think that really poisoned it.
I'm wondering what makes you think that.
Well, because no one ever stayed with me. I mean, I raised myself, basically. My mom wasn't around. Yeah. If she was, just physically, she, you know, was. And my mom, she was 15, so she never really had a shot at it either. So, and I didn't have a dad. So, heavy abandonment issues.
Yeah.
So, I don't trust anyone to be around. So, I don't trust myself. And also think I have imposter syndrome, where I don't think I'm really as good as other people think. So I go, okay, I'm just faking everything out. And eventually I'm going to be found out, and then everybody's going to leave.
But the crazy thing is, man, through all of our insecurities, all of our mess, there is someone out there for all of us that will love us through what we feel they might not love us through.
You would think.
Yeah, I'm a hopeless romantic, man. I'm a sap, bro. Like, I believe it. You know?
I take that back. I think that my last couple of girlfriends would have been there nonstop.
Yeah.
Nonstop, especially Lindsay. Mm-hmm. And the one, nonstop. But I killed it. They didn't kill it.
Yeah.
I killed it because I was afraid of it. I was afraid eventually they would peace out because they would realize what a fraud I am.
Yeah, man. And I think the crazy thing is, as weird as that is, I think that ties into everything. Like, I think that stuff like that is what messed my career up for so long. I was so worried about I'm not good enough, you know, thinking that, you know what, I can't be who I really am because nobody will think I'm cool or want my music. So I found that's probably why I found myself for so many years doing what everybody else wanted me to do, because I felt like, you know what, they see me, so they get it, you know, looking for validation in other things versus accepting myself for who I am, insecurities and all. And using that to push me to find out who I really am and where I want to go. Like, because it's crazy how your insecurities can legit kill everything.
And strengthen them if used in the right way.
And strengthen them, yep.
I believe I have been successful in my career because of my insecurities. Mm-hmm. But on a microphone, I can have a conversation that I can never have with a human without one.
Mm-hmm.
I would never have this conversation if these microphones weren't in front of us.
Yeah.
Shut down. Boom. That's it. I can say anything on the radio show because I get pretty personal. I talk about my book. I talk about a bunch of really personal stuff. If I'm having a human conversation with no microphone, it doesn't feel like it's play.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Yeah. Mine is via text. I can text anything I feel. But face to face, I'm a coward.
Is your mom proud of you?
She is, man. Yeah. She's proud, man. My dad is, like, so happy that I went back country. Because he is, like, if it was up to my dad, I would be dressed like John Party. I would have, no lie, I would have a huge belt buckle with a tiny button up and a cowboy hat. And I said, Dad, there's no way, bro. Like, there's no way. Like, boots, I love boots. I always wear boots or Chuck Taylors. Boots, yes. The big belt buckle, I wore it once in, like, ninth grade. There was a fad in Delaware where we would wear big belt buckles with Hawaiian button-up shirts. It was horrible. Like, it was bad.
Yeah, that's a fad. That's the definition of a fad.
Like, dude, it seemed like the coolest
thing. That's not even a trend. That's a fad.
That was a fad, bro. It was a bad idea. That's what it was.
I don't even own a pair of cowboy boots because I get so upset with people telling me I needed to wear cowboy boots.
Yes.
I vowed I'm never wearing cowboy boots. And I wasn't a cow. I didn't grow up in a – I grew up in a town of 800 people, and it was – and it still is segregated. There's a railroad track, and there's the white quarters and the black quarters.
Yeah.
It's still like that today.
Wow.
And it's 2018.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's like going back in time. Jeez, when I go home.
How is that?
It's just a really poor town.
And they haven't like even progressed mentally at all?
No one's – mentally I would say yes, but no one moves.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in, you kind of just die there.
Yeah.
And
golly.
It's still – there's a railroad track, and it separates. And I love my hometown, and it's all I know. And it's not a we versus them versus – it's just not that.
Yeah.
But there's always been a black quarters and a white quarters.
I don't know it any other way.
Yeah.
And then when I step back and think about it, it's crazy to think that right here we are in 2018 and it's still like that. There's no law. There's no rule that says that.
You have to say that, but that's just how they live.
That's just how everybody lives.
See, when I was in Delaware, everything was different. Like, we had four friends. I was a black guy. We had a Mexican, Amato, and two white guys, Drew and Steven. And, like, we did everything together, man. Like, built forts, tree houses, set stuff on fire, you know, shoot down beehives with BB guns. And I didn't really see the whole thing, like, not really paying attention to skin color. Like, we just treat everybody the same. Like, my parents would discipline them. Their parents would discipline me. And, man, it wasn't really till I went to college. And, you know, you start seeing people treat you different, even black people. Because, you know, I didn't dress like a stereotypical, like, black person. You know, I remember walking on college campus and I got on these, like, these jeans and, like, this blazer and, like, this tiny Hollister shirt with this choker chain. Man, the looks I got. What you doing, white boy? They're like, what do you mean? I'm not white, man. Like, you know, and then I met a few white guys that were just like, not really sure, man. You know, because of the whole black thing. Like, it's crazy. And I've had plenty of people say, well, Jimmy, do you think you're white because you wear cowboy boots? But I said, no. I said, my skin color does not define what I wear, who I date, what I listen to. If I wear cowboy boots, well, I'm a black guy that wears cowboy boots. If you're white, you're a white guy that wears cowboy boots. It has nothing to do, like, it used to always just upset me how people want to assign different things to different races. You know what I mean? Like, it kills me. Like, if you're white, you shouldn't be rapping. You know, like, but yeah, Eminem is one of the best rappers of all time. You know, if you're black, you shouldn't be doing country music. You know, the stereotypes are hilarious. Like, yeah, I think it's funny.
I've had a couple boot companies come and offer me deals and say, hey, we want you to wear our boots and we'll pay you a good amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
I was just told when I moved here, I never had cowboy boots as a kid. I didn't grow up, I wasn't a cowboy, and nobody said, hey, here are boots.
Mm-hmm.
So I never wore cowboy boots. But when I came to town, it was like, hey, where's your cowboy boots? I was like, F this.
Yeah. You're like, I'm not wearing boots.
Not now. And I probably would have if I wasn't told I was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we sit here, I mean, I got my Yeezys on.
You know, I've never worn a pair of Yeezys.
It's not worth the money.
Yeah.
You know the truth? It ain't worth the
money. I'm hoping I can get to know Kanye. He'll give them to me for free. Like, yay, let me get some shoes, bro.
What size shoe you wear?
I am 11 and a half, 12.
That's it?
Yeah.
How tall are you?
I'm like 6 foot right on the dot.
How much you weigh?
I am 210.
Okay, that's where it is. I'm surprised your foot's not big. That's about what I wear. But let's see. Because I have an easy hookup.
Yeah. Let me talk about that.
Let me see what I can do.
Yeah, my man.
Because I think I have. But the thing is, you can't get them anytime.
Yeah.
So I have a hookup, and I'll get a note. Hey, got a new shipment in. Mm-hmm. Do you want a pair? And I'll say, yeah. And so I'll get them for actual price.
Nice.
Which is super cheap compared to having to go online and pay $800 to $2,000 bucks for them. And so, I'll keep an eye out next time because I don't always get them. Because I have a bunch of shoes.
Are you a sneakerhead?
I wouldn't say I'm a sneakerhead, no.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy shoes a lot. Yeah. I like all shoes. Sneakerhead are guys that just do tennis shoes.
Yeah.
But I like dress shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I like slides.
Nice.
So I'm just a shoe
guy. You a flip-flop guy?
At times,
yeah.
I've got about three or four good. And I rotate them. Once I get a new pair I like, I'll throw the last pair. I'll donate them to somewhere else.
Yeah. You can't keep flip-flops forever because you get your footprint in it, especially if you're taking them to like the beach and it gets hot.
Nah, I go to the beach. Yeah. Oh, okay. I went to Hawaii. Hated it.
I saw that on your Instagram that you were there.
I'm not even miserable. I just.
What did you do to Hawaii?
I'd never been to ocean until I was probably 22 years old, right?
Yeah.
I never leave Arkansas
until
out of college. And then I never been to ocean. So what am I going to do at the beach? Mm-hmm. And then it's salty and you can't really swim in it because of the waves. But you live up near a coast. Yeah, so you probably
I grew up going to the beach, like skimboarding, and we would surf during hurricanes.
Skimboarding?
Skimboarding.
Skimboarding,
yeah.
Like skimboarding, that sounds like it
would hurt. Skimboarding, yeah. And then we would surf during like hurricanes because our waves weren't that big.
Can you surf?
A little bit. I wiped out a lot. I think the longest I've ever stood up on a surfboard was like maybe like 3 seconds.
Three?
Yeah, maybe a half. Maybe.
So you can't surf if you only stand up 3 seconds.
No, but I go all the time, and I'm still bad at it, but I just love it.
Like, yeah, Kip Moore is a huge surfer. Huge. Nice. And he... I don't hang out with really anybody in the industry.
Yeah.
Kip's, hey, come out to Hawaii. First of all, I don't hang out with anybody in Nashville. I'm not going to Hawaii to hang out with anybody. But I went out and I told the story on the air. And I got on a stand-up paddleboard. Looks like your grandma's doing it. I was like, I'm in.
Could you stand up on it?
Briefly, but the problem was, you tie this rope to you so the board doesn't fly away. So I guess... That's a thing because a wave crashes and the board boom, shoots off. I had it tied to my wrist because I know the difference. It's supposed to tie it to your ankle.
Oh.
And so I'm an idiot and I have the thing tied to my wrist and I can't fully get my balance. Yeah. So
good times.
Kip sends me a picture, a video of him strapping it on his ankle over and over again. But I'm also, I'm an okay athlete, but I'm a hard worker.
Nah, see.
So I wasn't a good enough athlete to get it at first.
Nah. I can't stand up on a wakeboard.
Oh, I can wakeboard. I can wakeboard.
I've never been able
to
get up.
But that's a lake. So I grew up on lakes.
Okay, cool. So you're a pro at that. I've never been able to get up.
I wouldn't say a pro, but I can wake skate.
How do you get up, though? Like, I've never been able to get my butt out of the water, like, at all.
Probably the same way. Yeah, it's tough. You hold your knees in tight.
Yeah.
And eventually, it's like riding a bike where once you feel it once,
You know
you try to get back to that spot, then you try to get up one. And once you start to, I don't know, it's hard to explain.
Okay.
But.
Yeah. I think once I get up, I'll be great. It's just the getting up problem.
Once you get up, you start to go, I'm up, boom, then you're out.
Down.
Yeah, yeah. Once you get up. All right, dude. I'm up. Here's some of this. This is Jimmy Allen. One of the. You're the first guy we brought in for a guy or girl for class of 2018.
Nice. That's a good class this year.
I think so. I think it's good every year, to be honest with you. But
I'm a little biased because it's my class. Yeah. Thanks, girl, you know I'm not, but I love you. Everything I
got, girl, I'll give you my best shot. We got some stuff we're coming to all you guys with. We're gonna do some stuff this year. It's gonna be real cool.
Nice, dude.
Yeah, it'd be real cool.
I'm looking forward to it.
It'd be real cool. Mike, you trying to say something over there?
No.
You're good. You have anything you want to say, Jimmy?
We're good. Man.
You good?
We're hanging.
I like got a little deep there for a minute.
I did.
Yeah. It's like, so spill your emotions into this cup.
Tell me about
have
it.
A drink of my tears, Jimmy, and then tell me what you feel.
Got like, very personal.
You got, yeah.
Like, Jimmy, throw out some stuff we can blackmail you with forever.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's good sometimes to just be real, man, and take some layers off. You know, so I think it's important to do that from time to time.
Transparency is how people love you the most.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're in my personal life, I'm completely transparent.
Yeah.
And when you date me, all the walls. I add more walls. Oh, so you want to get close to me? Yeah. Enjoy these 7 new walls.
Exactly. Do, 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 do.
Yes. Okay. We'll see. We'll have you on soon. We got to have you on the show real soon, too. So,
sweet, man. Looking forward to it.
So you're out back tonight? More radio tour?
Yeah, more radio tour.
How many more weeks are you on this thing?
Well, one person told me until the end of March. The other person told me until the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's
so,
it. It's the rest
it's
of your
the rest
life.
Of my life.
Until you get a number one.
Yeah.
And then it's always
even,
still.
Yeah, even then still, man. It's just I really enjoy meeting people. Like, I love it. Like, I can't imagine doing anything else. I get to travel the country and sing songs I made up. Like, it doesn't get much better than that, so.
You come a long way.
A long way.
You've even just come a long way from just in Nashville.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, a long way from
That's
Nashville.
That's crazy, dude. I have so much more respect for you now, like hearing your story.
Man,
and I knew
you.
Your story. I still didn't know your story. You never know somebody's story until you...
Man, you really don't, man. And, you know, hearing yours, man, about, you know, this, you know, giving the food stamp thing. And we used to have this stoop in Milton where we would get free lunches from, you know. I remember one time we had our electric shut off. And my mom that week, she said... acted like it was a camp out. Like, I didn't know our electric was off until I got older, she told me. She said, hey, guys, we're going to do, like, an indoor camp out for a week because the electric got shut off, you know. And one time we had nothing in the cupboard to eat but, like, crackers. And then his family from the church came and brought us groceries. Saved our life, man. So, you know, hearing you, you know, tell your story like that, dude, I get it.
But you know what you can do? And it's something that I try to do now is that you can help people that were like you.
Yep.
And that are like you now.
Mm-hmm. You should do the dollar thing, man. I started this thing. A guy gave me a dollar, changed my life. There was one time when I was in my car, I didn't eat for 2.5 days. A guy gave me a dollar. I got to make chicken. I get half on Wednesday, the other half on Thursday. So what I do now is I keep $2 cash in my pocket on purpose. And at the end of the day, by the time the day is over, I have to give them away. If somebody asks me for it or if I just see someone and give it to them, but I have to get because that dollar can really change somebody's life, man.
It's, I used to think I was very selfish, and I still at times think I'm selfish about the causes that I support because they all are personal to me.
Mm-hmm.
I go, why don't I just help birds or something? Mm-hmm. Instead, I want to help people that were like me, and I go, oh, I'm just trying to help me years ago.
But there's nothing wrong with that.
I mostly feel that way. I still feel a bit selfish. My high school recently, I didn't get to play ball a couple years because I couldn't afford the shoes, and I was too embarrassed that I couldn't afford the shoes, so I just didn't play ball.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I don't want to play basketball. Because I couldn't afford the shoes to match. And I'd rather not tell anyone. Because there were years where church would bring food. Mm-hmm. And they'd bring Christmas presents because we didn't have any. And so what I'm able to do now is I did it with my football team. Where I bought the uniforms for the school. But I was able to buy the entire basketball team shoes. Mm-hmm. Not because I wanted to buy the entire team shoes. Because I knew there were two kids that couldn't afford it. And I wasn't going to buy two kids shoes. Because then they're the ones who... you got to get shoes.
Buying
from
new shoes.
So if I go, hey, I can buy the whole team shoes. Mm-hmm. Then it's just like, oh, wow. Oh, exactly. Bobby Bones, yo, he's crazy. He's got, he's got money. But that's not what it's about. Yeah. It's not about going. It's just those two kids that I don't, that I was one of those kids and I had people help me out when I was younger.
Yeah.
So it's that type of thing. And that was that. Years ago. I'm not calling anybody out now. But yeah, man, I your story's great, man.
Thanks, man.
And I'm rooting for you. I wasn't until now, but I guess I will now. I guess I'm in.
Hey, my man.
I guess I'm in. All right, so check out Jimmy Allen. This is Best Shot. This is Single Now.
I'm not saying that I'm perfect, Oaks, girl. You know I'm not. But I love you with everything I got. Girl, I give you my best shot.
Mike, how long has it been?
51 minutes.
We went longer than we thought. Dang, look at that.
Nice. We're chatting it up. You got personal.
That's
a rat.
Yeah. I mean, got the old rectal check. That's how personal I got here. I got a hemorrhoid, you know. We go real personal. We go into our medical history. Yeah. All right, we'll see you next time. And thanks to our sponsors. This is the Bobby Cast, and we'll talk to you soon.